morning, everybody. It's Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. Shantae is behind the glass producing tonight. She'll answer your calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text at that very same number, 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile with Roger Badish up in the 7th Floor Newsroom. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. When is the actual birthday?
Next Friday.
24th, next Friday.
June 24th.
June 24th.
Yeah.
I won't see you till June 25th because it'll be 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I'll save you some whatever I bring.
Are you bringing in something really special?
Might be
delicious?
Cake, might be pizza. I don't know.
I don't think
I haven't really thought it out
or
yet.
Pizza. I think you go pizza and cake.
How about a pizza cake?
I really like cake as cake.
Oh, okay.
Because if you said, I've got a pizza cake, I would have been all excited for pizza because I heard the word pizza first.
First, right. Okay.
So I'd be thinking, ooh, Lou Malnati's or something like that, and then I'd be excited for cake, but I would be disappointed because I thought I had pizza too.
Okay. I'll think about it. I haven't really
thought
about it.
Not to be too greedy for your birthday, but...
I understand. That's okay.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at.
And it's weird. You know how, when you were younger, didn't you like look up what famous people had the same birthday as you?
You know, my birthday is actually on Christmas Day.
Well,
so
it's my brother's birthday.
It's your brother's birthday?
My older brother.
Get out of here.
He's 6 years older than me, and he was born on Christmas Day, yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, there are a couple of famous people born on Christmas Day, and I can't remember for the life of me now who they are.
Well, look it up during the next break. It's kind of weird, though, because for mine, there are not that many people that I've ever met that have the same birth date, and I live in a building, a guy in the building has the same birthday.
Get out of here.
I swear to God. And they've lived there almost as long as we have. It's really weird.
That is really weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
So that's pretty cool.
Well, early happy birthday to you, sir.
Well, thanks, sir.
Glasses are looking good this week. Looks like you're all fixed and ready to go.
Yes, yes. I finally brought them into an eyeglass place, I think it was Monday, and the lady tightened them up with a little screwdriver, and I says, you know, is there something else you could do to them, like maybe some epoxy or something so the screw doesn't come out? She says, hold on. And she went back with the technicians, and then she started to explain to me what they did, and I go, it's kind of like plumber's tape. Because she explained that there is a little material that they can put in there to make sure the screw stays tight.
Ah.
And it's like if you've ever repaired faucets or shower heads or anything, there's a thing called plumber's tape. It's kind of like a white kind of stretchy cloth that you put around, and then you screw whatever you got to put back in, and it holds real good. So that's what they did. So I'm doubly happy. And then, of course, thinking that I never saved any of my old glasses, I looked in the car the other day, and there's a glass case sitting in the little junk holder in the middle. And I'm always thinking, well, it's got to be Bridget's glass case, an empty one, because she leaves them all over the place. And I said, well, let me take a look at it. I open it up. There's an old pair of glasses with, like, scratches on the lenses. So now I know where my spare pair is.
Well, that's good. So you always have them with you now.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness we made it through that.
Yeah.
So at 4:30 this morning, we're going to be speaking with Ian Wright.
Is this the...
This is the guy that licks things.
Oh, please. Okay.
Floors, bathrooms.
Yes. Is this to test them for something, or?
This is to improve gut health, because we need good bacteria. As Wendy, you often hear her do advertisements for, who is it now?
The
Nature's...
Matron's... Trinity?
Trinity?
Yeah, I believe that's
something
it.
Like that, yes. So.
I listen enough to their show,
Natrons,
I should remember.
Not Matrons, Natrons. Natrons Trinity.
Natrons, okay.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
And that's for good, promotes good gut health.
Right.
And because we need good bacteria. There's live cultures and things like, well, you know, we have bacteria that we need. It's good. It cleans us out, whatever.
Right.
And he goes around licking things that you would never lick. And I think tests them for bacteria and then tells you what things are clean or not. I guess. I don't know. We're going to talk to the guy. Maybe he's just completely loopy.
Yeah.
Here we are all worried about getting bit by a mosquito. This guy's walking around licking a bathroom.
Yeah, I know, really.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hey, you know, what? Different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Phil Hirsch will be on the air with us tonight. He, formerly of the Chicago Tribune, he now writes his own blog, and he writes for the U.S. Olympic Committee. TeamUSA.org, I believe, is the website. He's writing stories for them now. He covered the Olympics for years and years and years for the Tribune. He'll tell us the latest with the Russian team getting banned in track and field. as well as his thoughts about the Zika virus as he heads down to Rio in about 5 weeks. So we'll chat with him. John Williams, my old buddy John Williams, is in town. He's doing his show here from the Tribune Tower tomorrow. I said, hey, John, show goes on the air, too, if you want to swing by. He said, well, what's on the agenda? And I told him what we've got going on, mm-hmm. and then I never heard back. So I'm guessing it didn't quite live up to John's standards. Instead, he had a couple cocktails and went to bed. I don't know. Maybe he shows up. I'm guessing not.
There's still hope.
There is. Yeah. There is. But, you know, if it was his show, I'd show up for him. But, you know, I was just the producer. I wasn't the host. So, and it's a day late. We're 2 hours and 17 minutes late. But do you know what yesterday was? Or maybe this was talked about ad nauseum. But we had a very important anniversary yesterday.
On Friday?
Yes. From what I understand.
That was the 16th, right? No, the 17th. Yesterday, Friday the 17th.
Okay, I'll believe you.
And a very important anniversary.
It was a big anniversary. It was a big anniversary.
Your anniversary?
No, it wasn't my anniversary. Hold on, let me see if I can maybe get you some anniversary audio.
That... an anniversary, June 17th.
Here it comes. It's been 1 year. They're bringing
crime. They're rapists. OJ. No. 1 year.
1 year ago. Free zone for ISIS. 1 year ago.
Oh, he entered the race?
He entered the race. 1 year ago.
It seems like longer.
Does it, or does it seem like, wow, it's really already been a whole year?
No, it seems way longer. It seems like my entire lifetime.
Because he's packed it up with stuff in that 1 year. Wow. Talk about a good, full, packed-in year, Donald Trump. Congratulations to you, sir.
Hey, give him one of those cupcakes with a candle.
Who would have thought he would have made it that long?
Wow.
And he's the nominee. I mean,
yeah.
Not only did he run for a whole year... he did something that I don't think anybody most likely predicted he'd do.
Oh, no way.
Some did, but not many. So we'll go over some of his greatest hits from the past year as we go into the next 5 months.
Okay.
That story gets more and more alarming. So this is the breaking news tonight. I don't know what time this broke tonight, how late in the day it was, but Friends of the Park.
Yep.
Now, this is just such a fascinating story,
mm-hmm.
and I see both sides of this. So George Lucas... has a couple of dollars, and he has collected a number of things over the years, apparently, from Norman Rockwell paintings to God knows what Star Wars stuff and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided, as a legacy, I'm guessing, he's going to open a Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. We don't know exactly what that means, because I think Blair Kamen tweeted something about this tonight. Tribune people, other people, I'm sure, have said, can we see what will be in the museum? And I believe that the answer so far has been no. You cannot. Maybe that's because they don't exactly know yet. Maybe it's because they have so much. Maybe they don't want to give away secret. I don't know why. But so George Lucas originally had looked at the San Francisco area. What is going on with our on-air signal tonight? Because I know Patty was hearing this stuff cut out.
And I
heard Craig saying
it,
but I was hearing it in the car.
Oh, you were?
Yes. So like the station was cutting out for just a blip of time. As if they were swearing up a storm here on the Patty Vasquez show tonight.
Right.
Because I remember driving going, wow, what's going on there? And then I heard Craig comment on how Patty's playing with her headphones, and he was saying, I don't think it's your headphones. So we got something weird.
And I just heard a little crackle.
Something in the air is going on tonight. So anyways, George Lucas wants to build a museum, okay?
Yeah.
And he goes to San Francisco. I think he wants it on the grounds of the Presidio, if I have that right.
Well, they rejected that, and they proposed an island... out there.
Recently, they proposed that.
Right. That's the most recent comeback thing.
But way back in the day,
right.
George says, hey, you got this great plot of land in Presidio. That would be great. Look at the Bay. Beautiful. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to let you do that.
Yeah.
Fine. I'll go to Chicago, where my new wife is from. So they come to Chicago and say, hey, Rom, how about we put this beautiful new museum on your lakefront?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, all right, sounds good. And then Friends of the Park comes and says, no, we have laws that say nothing is supposed to be built anymore east of Lakeshore Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much that is truly and purely legal or not, but that's what it's supposed to be. We've devised a plan that nothing is supposed to be built east of Lakeshore Drive. We already have museums there. We already have parking lots. We already have some of McCormick Place. We have some things there. Nothing else is supposed to be built east of Lakeshore Drive. And the Friends of the Park fights against this stuff like crazy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to battle about it. And so at first they don't want it built in between Soldier Field and McCormick Place. And then Emmanuel and others come back and say, hey, how about we tear down part of McCormick Place? We'll build it there. They say, no. It's got anything that comes down, it reverts to parkland. It's got to stay free and open. That's the goal, free and open space on our lakefront. And I understand and I appreciate that because, let's face it, we have a limited amount of that. And Chicago has done an incredible job of keeping those areas open and beautiful. And especially in a time like right now, when the city is so dangerously bankrupt, when the state is so dangerously bankrupt, when we're selling away our parking meters and our skyway and our red light camera and everything else, you could just see, well, hey, if we sold some of this, we could fund some pensions. We could do some things. We could put the kids back in school. So it would be a dangerous slope to say, well, you know, we've got this land and we need this money. Maybe we do this. So I do appreciate Friends of the Park for that. Even though, I'd be cool with this museum because I'm a Star Wars fan, and sure, I imagine there'd be some cool Star Wars stuff there, and I'd like to go to it.
Tourism would be great.
Well, and here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. The Field Museum, just a year or two ago, I believe, was talking about their budget problems and how bad things are, and they need more visitors. Mm-hmm. If you bring a million more people down towards the lakefront for the Lucas Museum, chances are some of them are going to trickle over to the Planetarium and the Shedd Aquarium and the Field Museum. Mm-hmm. So that's good for them. You're bringing more people down to the area. So, and quite honestly, I believe that based on some of the proposals, they'd be adding more green space. Because if you take away that parking lot and put this up, you're taking away a parking lot. If you take away McCormick Place and put this thing up, the dimensions, I think they could find a way to say, hey, we're adding more green space than what is currently there.
I think they've always touched on that.
Yeah.
That they're at, here comes the structure, but we're going to green so much more that's not currently green.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Friends of the Park says, hey, that doesn't matter.
Mm.
If we're taking it down, we go green space. So I appreciate that they're fighting the good fight on that to some level. But both sides, and Melody Hobson, who is George Lucas's new wife, she's an African-American woman from Chicago. And she had a press conference or at least a media talk. She was appearing at a school, and she told the media, it was interesting, she called Friends of the Park a small special interest group that's hijacking this process, not really representing Chicago, just this small group of people who, you know, trying to do what they want because they filed a lawsuit, which has so far stopped this museum from moving forward and is threatening to tangle it up for long enough that George Lucas went back to San Francisco, or San Francisco came to George and said, hey, so you're having problems with Chicago, how about this? Mm-hmm. And they have some sort of man-made island?
No, it's an actual outcropping
island
that's just sitting out there, and the only way to get to it is by taking a ferry boat. That's the only way to get there.
So they're saying, hey, what if we give you some land here and do it there?
Yeah.
And now he's considering that. And I don't know if that's real or if that's just, hey, Chicago, look at this. I got another site. I might take my ball and go home. Melody Hobson, in her little media thing that she did, was saying that, and she was, you know, upset with Friends of the Park because they're holding up this process. But she was saying how it was very interesting the way she spun it. She spun it as, you are taking, by Friends of the Park doing this, they're taking away the opportunity for these underserved, underprivileged kids to have an opportunity to learn the narrative arts and to take classes in filmmaking or writing and all these different things they'd never get to do. And Friends of the Park is robbing them of that opportunity, which I thought was fascinating because you don't have to build it there. You could find another place to build your museum.
Right.
But they're like, no, it's on the lakefront or else we walk away. So there's that. So I think they're being disingenuous on their side by saying, well, how could you do this to these kids? Well, you're doing the same things with these kids, saying if I don't get it where I want it, I just won't put it here at all. So you're taking it away from those kids too. Elliot Serrano, who's on Patty, we were talking about this last week, he's like, well, where else would they put it? There's no other place that they could put it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think that's true at all. You could find a million different places to put it. There was one proposal.
Well,
there was one proposal even to put it just on the other side of Lakeshore Drive in some vacant-ish land with railroad tracks and stuff.
Right.
My proposal is do that, put it on the other side of Lakeshore Drive and bridge over part of Lakeshore Drive and make it nice green space.
Sure.
I think between Soldier Field and McCormick Place, just north of McCormick Place, if you put it on the other side of Lakeshore Drive and we bridge over some of Lakeshore Drive there and make it all green space all the way to the lake, it becomes lakefront property. Boom.
Yeah.
So I think there's a million different ways they could do it if they really wanted to.
And there was even a supposed deal last week or the week before.
Michael Sneed reported last week.
Right, that they were going to, the city
Friends of the Park
add,
was given in.
Right.
Mayor Emanuel was going to go along with this last 4 miles proposal, which added some beachfront land on the south side and the north side.
Right.
And so that got floated out there. And then Friends of the Park came out very strongly denying that, mm-hmm. saying the board is not fractured. We all stand as one. They issued a statement saying, nope, we're not dealing. Now, Cranes tonight mm-hmm. reported that Friends of the Park appears ready to negotiate with the city on a grand bargain that would bring the proposed Lucas Museum of Narrative Art to the South Side Lakefront. I think this is the same area. They call that the South Side Lakefront, but yeah. to me, that's not really South Side.
They're talking the
south
old
of
McCormick
downtown.
Place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The decision at a meeting of the executive board of Friends of the Park yesterday is outlined in a memo to the group's board members that Cranes obtained from multiple independent sources. The memo from Executive Director Juanita Irizarry, I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yes, you got it.
Outlined six concessions that the group wants in order to reach a settlement over Mayor Emanuel's plan to build the museum where the Lakeside Center currently sits on the east end of the McCormick Place campus. The plan, as well as construction on an initial site proposed on a parking lot between McCormick Place and Soldier Field, has been blocked by the lawsuit. None of the six conditions on their face appear to be deal killers, though some are, quote, very difficult, as one source put it. Here's what they now will put on the table for negotiation with the mayor, according to the memo. One, a legally enforceable agreement to protect the lakefront from development other than park recreation related uses for the next 100 years. So that's interesting to me that they're asking for that, because they must feel that even though they've got this lawsuit and they're stopping it for now, mm-hmm. that they might not win down
right.
the road.
Right.
Two, unspecified changes in Lucas's ground lease on the publicly owned site to, quote, conform to that of the other public museums in Chicago. Three, development of DuSable Park near the once proposed Chicago Spire project just north of where the Chicago River enters Lake Michigan. Four, creation of a neighborhood parks fund that would get 5% of museum revenues and be used to pay for capital improvements in, quote, disinvested neighborhoods. And that's something I was speaking with Mark Conkle from DNA Info this week, and he was saying, you know, how can we talk about this when we have so many areas of Chicago mm-hmm. that are suffering so badly, and this is dominating, and this is what we're talking about.
Right.
But here's a way that maybe we get, some, you know, parks on the south side, parks in Inglewood and
sure.
Woodlawn, areas that you know are not getting the love they need. Mm-hmm. If we could divert some funds because of this to that, that would be good.
Sure.
Number five, agreement on a community benefits deal in which a significant number of the jobs at the Lucas Museum will go to low-income and minority residents. And six, conversion of that parking lot, which was to be the original proposed site of the museum, into, quote, a green event space suitable for tailgating by Chicago Bears fans, among other uses. I keep talking. I forgot I got to take a break here because we got to get some news. But then we'll talk about this a little more. I wonder what people think. Do you care if we use the lakefront land for something like a museum or other uses? Does it matter to you? Do you want this museum here? Or do you not care at all if it even stays? I'd be interested in your thoughts. Two 2:38 in the morning. The Divvy bike riders are outside on the sidewalk. It always cracks me up when I see people on Divvy bikes at 3 in the morning. Like, hey, you know what would be a great idea? Let's get on bikes, man. Let's go. And somehow people don't get killed.
Well, knock on wood.
Yep.
Or for Micah or
yeah,
whatever.
You know what? It was like, what, 2 years ago, Kevin Richter was producing when I was doing the show. And the Divvy bikes came out. And we were talking here in the stories. You know, there was video of somebody, like there was a woman, a foreign tourist with a Divvy bike riding north on Lakeshore Drive.
I remember that. Yeah.
You know, people take these bikes everywhere.
Sure.
And we kept waiting. And Kevin at the time, this is before he was producing Bill and Wendy full time, he was working here on the weekends and he was a valet at a hotel downtown. And he said he saw these people all the time riding the bikes like idiots, wrong ways on streets and, mm-hmm. you know, not on just streets mm-hmm. with bike lanes. And he was waiting for, and we kept betting on when somebody's finally going to get killed riding a Divvy bike. And somehow that has not happened as of yet. So hopefully that continues. But if my children ever rent a Divvy bike at 3 in the morning and start riding up and down Michigan Avenue, I'm going to be very upset with that.
I would say so.
Turning into my mother now. we went, before the news there, we went over the six things that Friends of the Park is asking for If Rahm Emanuel wants to put the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art on the lakefront.
But there's one more thing. It's not in their manifesto.
I don't know that they'd call it a manifesto.
Well, I'm just saying.
That has a connotation to it demands, I don't think they'd like.
You know. Okay. But there's one more huge thing.
Thank you, Donald.
Stumbling block that they might run into.
Which
is? It is requiring over $1 million of state funds.
No. No, you have that number wrong, sir.
$1.2 million.
No.
Well, that's why.
Using the wrong letter at the beginning of that.
Billion.
$1.2 billion.
Billions and billions, yeah.
Emanuel
of stars.
Still will have to convince state lawmakers and Governor right. Bruce Rauner to approve a $1.2 billion borrowing scheme in which several convention-related taxes are required.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I'm... I'm sorry, Mr. Lucas. You just made $4 billion selling Lucasfilm to Disney, and we have to borrow $1 billion to build you a museum?
Yeah, but I think the deal is he's still building his facility. He's using his money to build the facility.
What do we need $1.2 billion for, then?
To tear down McCormick Place to make room for it, and to then put up the other green stuff that you mentioned, you know, the parking lot stuff and everything.
Yes. I can go get a bunch of guys on a weekend, and we can tear stuff down for well under $1.2 billion.
You need some big
sledgehammers. And we can plant some trees.
Yeah.
You know, you know what? We don't ask people to just, you know what we need to do with this city? We need to run it a little more like Little League.
There
Nobody
you go.
Gets paid nothing. You help out, and some people help out a lot more than others, and you're really annoyed
right.
at other people that never help out, and you appreciate that Joe helps out all the time, and your wife gets mad at you because all you're doing is going to those stupid Little League fields. But in the end, all these kids play baseball, and it works yeah. out. And here in the city, we're like, I mean, if in Little League we said, well, we need $1 billion so Joe can chalk the field, that wouldn't work. And here in the city, we're like, well, let's get $1 billion. How about Joe and Steve, and we ask, hey, all these great construction companies, would you guys mind just lending us like one worker and a big backhoe for yeah. a weekend, and we'll kind of throw your name up there. We'll do something real nice for you, but just tear this thing down for us. Help us out a little bit. I mean, seriously, is that really what it's for, Rogers, just to tear stuff down?
No, you know, and bring some Kool-Aid and some sandwiches for them. You know, that would help out.
People would bring sandwiches.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, if you tell Chicagoans, hey, we're going to do this, let's all pitch in,
right.
and let's go tear this thing down. It'll be fun.
Of course it will.
You I mean, you know, here's what down. We do. If we're going to tear something down, find a movie production company that's filming
Ooh.
Some superhero movie, and let's blow it up.
There you go.
And we'll film it, and they'll pay for it.
Well, they've done enough of those Transformer
movies. Do a Transformers movie.
Yeah.
Do a Batman movie. Blow something up. For goodness sakes.
Blow
it doesn't
up
cost
good.
One point. Are you sure that that's what the $1.2 billion is for?
I think that's what it that's what's entailed, because he just wants to pay for the building of his facility.
Well, what happened when it was on the when it was on this parking garage place? Was that still
oh, on the
we were borrowing
lot?
$1.2 billion then?
No, there was
the
no
$1.2
word of
billion
that.
Dollars is brand new
that's
with
brand
the
new,
well
I
we'll
think.
Move it here.
Yeah. Right,
we're
down,
always borrowing
down,
billions
down.
Of dollars
I
we
know.
Don't have. Did
well,
you see?
Figure someone else will pay it 20, 30, 40 years from now.
Cook County Clerk David, no, we'll pay for it. Cook County, well,
that's what I'm saying.
But you will. Yeah. Cook County Clerk David Orr this week had a little released a statement because, you know, tax bills are coming out.
Yeah.
And the average Chicagoan living within the city, their tax bill went up 13%.
Yeah.
13%. And that's year one of a 4-year increase. So 13% this year, you got three more years of increases coming.
I did a story the other morning about these guys. I forgot what the suburb was, but they paid their property tax bills in $1 bills. $11,000 in $1 bills and change.
That's a neat like little statement to make, but
yeah.
it couldn't have been worth the time. To go to your bank and say, I need 11,000 singles, and your bank goes, well, we don't have 11,000 singles, idiot.
No.
What do you want? You know, he had to go to, like, how many banks? How do you get 11,000 singles?
I don't know, but it sounded like he was happy to do it from
well,
the story I read.
I imagine
yeah.
he was, because he thought, look at me. I showed them, and they said, no, you didn't. We have your $11,000. And
paid.
We're fine with singles.
Yeah. And he said that was also just half of the bill, because,
oh
you know, they
gosh.
Split it up.
Well, wait a minute.
You know.
Where so... I'm so, here's the thing.
Right.
If your 6-month tax bill is $11,000, yeah. I don't feel that much sympathy for you because you're doing pretty well, apparently. Where are you living that you're paying $11,000 every 6 months?
Yeah, but it's gone up. Well, he paid
Well, I know
property.
It went up. It didn't
he's
go up that much.
He's paid some business taxes, too. He's got a business. But still.
Okay.
But he says it's gone. It went up over the past year.
It's all
going
to keep going up. It's going to go up like crazy.
I know.
We have, the city has run. I mean, listen. Mayor Daley, I loved Mayor Daley, but the things he was apparently doing that wasn't telling us about, not good.
Yep.
We're not paying pension. We're not doing all these things. And the tulips are beautiful on Michigan Avenue. You got to give them that. But at the expense of what? We sell off the Skyway. Wasn't that a $99 million deal?
Yeah, but the money
was gone.
Was gone
the moment we got it.
Yeah.
We got red light cameras. We got all these. You're paying now in the city for water and garbage you didn't use to pay for all these things, all these services, everything's getting added in.
The bus stops.
Nothing seems to be getting any better, though, does it?
No. No, we keep seeming to be getting further and further in debt.
And people are moving out of the city. Just just last week, I think, we spoke with Heidi Stevens of the Tribune, who wrote a beautiful article. She lives in the city. And that six-year-old girl that got shot a week or two ago, that was only a few blocks from her. And she was saying, you know, I don't know how much longer we do this.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, the city announced so that house where this girl was shot, in, I think it was in Logan Square, it was a problem house. And the whole block had been saying, you know what, there's problems here. There's gang activity. There's all these things. The city forced the residents out. It's a very interesting deal. You can read about it at DNAinfo.com, and I did an interview with the writer on it. And it's a very interesting deal because the city came out because, you know, there was a six-year-old girl who was there at the house at a relative's party. She's there. It's her aunt's house or something. She's there at a party. And she's playing outside 8 o'clock at night, and she gets shot. And apparently there have been shootings before in this area because there's some gang activity there or some people who aren't very good people there. So the city looks into it, and they go there, and they do inspections on the house. And they find reasons to say this house is unlivable anymore. And so they're going to kick the people out. And the owner agreed with the city that they will sell the house and not let the people come back, the people that live there. The people that live there right now are permanently banned from being at the house. So there's that. And the city gets them to agree to this. I don't know how legal any of that is. I've never heard of residents being banned from a house.
Well, they could do it on health issues. They could do that. They could say that the building's condemned.
The building was sort of condemned.
Yeah.
Here's the list of things they came up with. The sidewalk is uneven.
Yeah.
They came up with some things that would not normally get you kicked out of a house, which is fine with me because this is a problem house for this block. These people keep getting in trouble. The alderman spoke to the people that live there. The police spoke to the people that live there. And they concluded afterwards, things ain't going to get no better if these people keep living here. This is a problem. So the city found a way to get them out. Whether or not that all falls within the parameters of what is truly legal or not, I don't know. But they did something to get them out of there. So I thought that that was interesting. And the way the city got around, how do we get them out of here? Let's find a way to get them out of here. So they did. But things just aren't getting any better in the city, and I can't believe every day, and now that I'm also working at DNAinfo.com, I keep reading all these stories and interviewing people about just a CPS employee shot outside a school in Austin this week while class was in session. 2 hours later or 3 hours later, they had their eighth grade graduation. They took down the police tape outside of the school, and everybody came for a graduation.
Yep.
Just like, yep, that's
like
normal.
Nothing
that's
happened.
Life.
Yep.
And I don't know whether that's resilience or just, I don't know what to think as they do that.
But it's necessity. This is how they carry on. This is how you move on. Remember, I worked at Chicago Vocational for about 10 years, and we had two different gangs, and they would pull fire alarms to run outside of the school, grab their weapons that they'd left outside, run across to the park and have their battles. Kids would bring guns into the schools. We had one incident where a kid went out in the back and started shooting in the back parking lot, missed the person he was shooting at and hit someone else. We had guns fall out of kids' belts and go off as they hit the ground.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing when you're in class and your gun falls out of your belt and then it goes off.
But
you're
this was,
so embarrassed about
this
that.
This was a way of, they said, yeah, and we're here to get an education.
Did the kids ever actually say that?
The juxtaposition of the two, I just never, I understood from their point of view, because I spent so many years teaching over there, but I still just couldn't wrap my brain around it. How can someone live in this type of an environment and still carry on with the things most people take for granted every day? School, riding a bus, going to a job. It was very unnerving, especially when I had several of the students, not my personal students, but several in the school, actually physically threaten me with, not with the guns in their hands, but with a threat of, wait till you come outside, I'm going to take care of you. It was very unnerving.
Yeah, I would imagine. And this was when?
From 2000 to 2010.
Somehow it's getting worse and worse. And you know, it's crazy, Rogers. I'm reading about, you know, this dramatic rise in violence and murders. But in the late 90s, it was even worse.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
Well, you have to get into a study of gangs in the city. And back in the day, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. gangs were very well organized. There were handfuls of gangs, but they were very well organized, and they followed sets of rules. But those gangs, as the government went after them to tear them apart, the gangs fractured. And now you have dozens of smaller gangs, and there are no ground rules. There are no rules to protect one gang against the other anymore. They don't fight over territory. They fight over the most insignificant of things. You looked at me wrong. Your brother looked at me. Look what happened with that child who was lured into the alley and murdered.
Yeah.
For no other reason that his brother had done something to someone else in the gang. The rules have completely changed now with the gangs in the city. And if you talk to the police who study this, the gang crimes division, they will tell you the exact same thing.
Then why has this gotten so out of control? Is it, you know, some of the talk has been that because the police, because of what's going on in the police department, are hesitant now, that they're backing off and they're not riding the gang members as hard, doing things like that, that the gang members feel a freedom that they haven't felt in forever. Is that it? Or why aren't we getting federal funds? Why aren't we getting something to help break up these gangs?
Right.
Now?
I think it starts, I believe, not that I've done a study of this, but I think it starts with the gangs themselves. They feel so emboldened to do whatever they want to do, maybe because the city doesn't have the resources, or maybe because they're making more money doing what they're doing than if they went to school and tried to learn a regular trade or tried to you know, do something else with their lives. Why do you think there's no solution? Because there are so many issues involved, and no one can agree on which way to go, and some of the solutions take a lot of money. And it seems as though that over the decades that the money has been, you know, good money has been thrown after bad, and that there's still no changes. So, you know, this has been studied ad nauseum by people way, way smarter than me. And look at where we're at.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It is not getting any better. 312-981-7200 is the number. Lots more fun stuff to do later in the show as well. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720 WGN. 2:57 in the morning here, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. We're talking about what's going on in Chicago. We started with Friends of the Park, and the Lucas Museum, but then got into everything else that's going wrong in the city right now. Some callers at 312-981-7200, including Daryl. Daryl, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
So Shante wrote on the screen, former gang member. Is that true, Daryl? You were in a gang?
Yes. It was in the 70s. I'm older now. I'm 61. And I would say my tenure was from about 1968 to about 75. But the comment I wanted to comment on with what the gentleman was saying is how the gangs have changed. Because back in my day, yes, we had our little turf wars, and we had, you know, there was weapons involved at times, but there were sets of rules. You didn't go after innocent people. You didn't have these drive-by shootings. You didn't have senseless, you know, knocking down old lady type of stuff. You just didn't have that type of thing going on. It was a different atmosphere. Thank God I got out of it. I straightened my life out. I went to college, got married a whole bit. I haven't been involved for years. But the point I'm trying to make is, he is definitely right. The whole atmosphere of gangs is so fractioned off and so disorderly. There is no orderly, not that gangs were ever orderly in a sense. Crime is bad, and I get that. But there was a code of ethics, believe it or not. And that code of ethics no longer exists.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Daryl, what brought you into a gang? Why would you start running with a gang?
Well, I'll be honest. My dad split on us. I was only 14. My mother, God bless her soul, but she just wasn't. She had a lot of mental problems. She had a nervous breakdown and what. And I was looking for direction. I'm just, you know, I'm not making excuses.
Sure.
I think at that time I was looking for some direction, and I wanted to belong. I was the only son. I had two sisters, and I just evolved into it. I wasn't my aspiration as a young kid, but it's something that just I evolved into it. I never killed anyone or nothing. Thank God for that. But yeah, we did some stuff. We did do some stuff that we weren't, I'm not proud of. But
yeah.
You know, I'm just glad I straightened out and I got out of it and everything worked out okay. But
yeah, me too.
You know, all I'm simply saying is gangs are bad. I think your co-host was right. I mean, all this money, the good money after the bad money, there is no simple solutions.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Daryl. I appreciate the call. Rob is on hold. Ken is on hold. Guys, stick with us for a couple of minutes. Let Roger do a quick newscast because you have some good comments I want to keep you on about. Texter from 773 says, the scary part isn't the number killed in gun violence. It's the number caught. 470 shot and killed in 2015, only 128 in custody, according to DNAinfo.com. Rob and Ken at 312-981-7200 right after the news. You as well. By the way, Roger, I don't know if in your headphones you're hearing it as well as
yes.
I am, but we've got this issue going on with the transmitter or something tonight
right.
where we sound like we're on an old 45 record.
So yeah,
I kind of like that.
There's a crackling,
a skip once in a while,
right.
And it sounds like we're playing 45s in the basement late at night. So I kind of like that vibe that we got going.
Yeah, that's cool. How did you know I was playing 45s in the basement? Never mind.
And we're not going to say what else you were doing there.
Nope.
Matt Bubalo here with you, Radio 720 WGN. We're talking about some of Chicago's woes here when we're headed into the news. A couple of callers. I still wanted to get on the phone, 312-981-7200. Ken, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. I was listening to an interesting conversation, gentlemen.
Thank you.
But, you know, it seems like parents, this reminds me a lot like, well, let's blame the teachers. Well, you know, and parents, again, not taking responsibility for bringing that life into the world, not stepping up. I think our society maybe a bit too secular. Perhaps the churches in that neighborhood where that troubled child belongs, perhaps their pastors, they ought to visit the home, see if they can get the mother's, in most cases, just a single parent, get the mother's head together, and so she can learn how to be a mother again, in charge. You brought this child, you brought this life into the world. Now you have to take ownership of that responsibility. I'm not trying to simplify things one bit, but perhaps by throwing money at it, we're doing everything all wrong. We got to go a little bit more in the heart rather than in a wallet. And
well, Ken,
I'll let you gentlemen comment. Go ahead.
I know you're saying you're not simplifying it, but let's face it, that's really simplifying it, saying the pastors need to visit the home to tell the mom to be a better mom. First of all, I don't know if you've been in a church lately, but most of them do not have enough workers to go around. The pastors, the priests, there's not enough of those people, and especially in a neighborhood where this, you know, it's not, well, there's this one family on the block that really needs help. If that was the situation, it'd be a lot easier to do this type of thing, right? But we're talking about a generational situation here where there's a lot of single parents, you're right, there's not enough jobs, there's not enough money. If you're a single mom raising kids, you're not around all day to get to parent them. You've got to work. You've got to support them. So there's all these things going on. You're right. We need community leaders. We need people to step up and help these kids and help these families. But when you're in this system where we have so much going on, where people don't have jobs, that leads to crime. That leads to joining gangs. That leads to all of these things that are this vicious circle. We don't have a short-term fix. This cannot be fixed by August. That's for sure. This is a generational situation where a lot of stuff is going to happen, have to happen to make things better in these areas. And that means getting kids back in school, getting better jobs and more jobs in the area, getting rid of guns, giving them alternatives. All of these things have to happen, and money will have to go in to do that. That's for sure. There's just so many different things that are an issue here. And you know, Ken, when you say something like, well, you brought this life into the world, you got to do a better job. But we also have so many people pushing for less birth control and more abstinence teaching, and that's another issue that a lot of kids are brought into the world that parents aren't ready for. So we need education so people are maybe a little older, maybe a little more established before they're having children. And I think there's two different fights on that side that prevent some of that from happening. Roger?
And if I can add one more thing, Ken, a lot of the misperception is that there is a single parent at the home. And I think you even mentioned that there's no parent. And I think it's more that way. In the 10 years that I was working at the school, I met so many kids who were living with grandparents. There were no parents. Yeah. And the grandparent is raising not only these kids from that the other couple, but also grandkids from their other offspring. And usually there was 5, 6, 7 in a household, and the grandparent was not in good health and couldn't do much of anything. And there were so many times when there would be report card pickup where no parents would show up at all. Why? Most of them were working 2 to 3 jobs. Most of them were a single parent trying to keep the family together. How many of my students were listed as homeless? There was no place for them to go. Many of them were staying with friends that they had grown up with in the neighborhood. There are so many issues that are involved, and it's not necessarily focusing on, you know, the parents had these kids, they should be more responsible. That's something that I think happens all across the spectrum for many different reasons. But is it a household issue in neighborhoods where the crime rate is higher? Yes, it's one of many, many issues, as we discussed before, that just it's very difficult to address in a quick manner where it's like, okay, we got that done. Now let's move on to this. And as we piece this all together, we can take care of this problem. And I think that was alluded to by Matt a little bit also. It's a generational kind of thing, too. So, I mean, great insight, Ken. Great insight on that. And, again, it's one of those things that has to be amongst the mix of things to be addressed.
Yeah, that's the problem, is it's not one thing that can happen to change this. There are so many different things that need to get put into action. And it's a problem because we want change now. There's too many shootings. There's too many killings. There's all these things. What can we change right now? So the focus becomes, how do we stop this right now? And more money, when people say, oh, money thrown at this, the money needs to be thrown at a generational helping. That sucks because it's not going to necessarily help the kids right now. But I just don't know how you help kids right now. There has to be something done to try to stem things and change things now. But it's really a long-term change that has to happen. Thank you very much for the call, Ken. Rob, you're on 720 WGN.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing?
Good. What did you want to say?
You know, I could be totally wrong on this, but I really think a lot of the issues that we have in our society right now is that here's these young kids who maybe don't get the best grades, maybe don't have, you know, help at home, and they could, there was a time where they could always go and work at the steel mill, or there was a time that they could work at a factory job, or they could go and find themselves a job, a decent paying job, and be able to make a living, or be able to, you know, there's some hope. And I think you've taken the hope out of, when you've eliminated all these jobs, when you've taken all these jobs and outsourced them and sent them to China and sent them to Mexico and sent them all over the world. And you come in, and like Roger was saying, these parents now have to work two jobs because there's no good paying jobs. And I look at it and I say, okay, if I have the hope of being able to make a living or provide for my family by going to a job between, you know, make 40 hours or 50 hours a week, now I have to go to a job and work 60, 70, 80 hours a week to make a living, or two jobs, I think it puts a burden when you're not there 80 hours a week, because you have to provide the basic needs of, okay, I got to put a roof over my kids' head, I got to put food on the table, and I'm working 80 hours a week. Well, you're not home to take care of your kid. You're not home to watch them because you're just trying to keep a roof over their head. And I think a lot of this, you know, people want to say, oh, $15 an hour, $15 an hour. It's not the ultimate answer, obviously. But, you know, there should be a living wage, and then there should be minimum wage. And I look at these things where, you know, it's such a, like you said, it's such a complex issue. But when you're taking all the jobs and you're sending them away, all the good paying jobs, and you're sending them all away, you're putting a burden on society and on these single moms or these single dads. And, you know, if you're never home to take care of your kids because you're just trying to provide the basics, I think it really, you know, I think that is an issue that our society is not really addressing.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and that's a longer-term thing. And I never understand why on the South Side we can't talk somebody into building, you know, bringing some jobs to the South Side, bring a factory. I mean, I know the steel mills went away, things like that, but we have areas that are marked for, you know, there's the Clybourne Corridor, they're redistricting. It's supposed to be a manufacturing area, but now because the area is becoming hot, they want to change that so they can build condos and do stuff like that. How do we not try it? How is Mayor Emanuel not trying? You know, we get McDonald's to move their headquarters. He gets all these people to move their headquarters, but we can't get anybody to build a factory, to build something that would provide decent jobs for people that need to work. It's surprising that we can't find some way to push that. I wonder if the administration is trying to do that at all, because there's one thing that would certainly be great to do is bring some more jobs to the area to try to encourage people to get better paying jobs, which would help them not, you know, you have to assume some of the gang related activity, some of the illegal activity is because of, here's a good alternative to make some money, to have a lifestyle that we like. And if those jobs aren't there, you know, and if the education right now isn't there to get the better paying jobs, then we need some sort of jobs that can help put people to work.
Thank you for letting me share my heart with you.
I appreciate it, Rob. Thanks so much. Have a great day. We appreciate it. Tim is on 720 WGN. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
How are you, sir? What would you like to say?
I know the park that Roger's talking about is Jeffrey Park.
Okay.
And years ago, it was a great place. I've been in this. I should preface this that I'm in a liquor business.
Okay.
And I've been there 45 years. My father-in-law started it. Short story, we've been there 60 years.
Wow.
Years ago, we could hire teenagers to stock shelves, clean the store. They come in after school. I drop them off at home. Now the city of Chicago says you have to have a 21-year-old work in a liquor store. We are a pretty prominent liquor store in the city. We built a store outside of Cook County and the city of Chicago because of the taxes. But that being said, between the late 70s and early 80s, we hired kids in the neighborhood, predominantly 100% African-American, that got college degrees. Now you can't hire those kind of kids anymore.
Well, you can't because it's a liquor store, right? I mean, that's not a That's a restriction because of the liquor.
It was a stacking business.
But if you were...
They didn't ring liquor up.
Right, right. They were just stocking it. But
stock the shelves, neighborhood kids.
So they can't
the
stock
Chicago
liquor.
Chicago decided that we don't need that.
Well, I imagine that's pretty common. I mean, is that a surprise law? Is that not a law in other big cities?
Well, we moved out to Homer Glen to get out of the tax-restricted state or Cook County and City of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we just left it. We're still in that neighborhood, but we built the store outside of it. And out here, we can hire kids that are 18 years old or 16.
To stock
and clean and whatever.
Well, it's a shame you can't hire those kids. I don't imagine. I know that there's a lot of liquor stores, but I don't think that's not going to solve the problem. That would get a bunch more kids working, I guess. But I mean, unless there's a bunch of laws that were passed like that restricting kids from working, I can't imagine that's made that big of a dent, has it?
Well, it gives them an avenue,
sure,
to an education. They would go away at the end of summer. They had a job when they came back to the city.
Yeah.
You know, and the laws being processed through the city of Chicago are restrictive. And again, now you're getting to the point, it's a one-parent family.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the big issues, I think, is people having kids too young, not, you know, having their direction in life, not going to school, not continuing their education because of that. And then
when
couples don't stay together, and listen, there's plenty of single parent families in the world that are doing a great job, but to start out that way and not have the education and the backup family support that you need to be able to raise a kid in a single family home, it's very difficult. It's very difficult on anybody. And to be in a position where you don't have the ability to have a good job to help pay for the things you need and help keep your kids active and all of that stuff. And, you know, if you don't have a good support system, I think a lot of these kids that are having kids at a young age in a disadvantaged area, it's not like, well, dad's got them on Tuesday and Wednesday and I got them. I think the dads often just drop out of the picture altogether, or one of the parents does.
Oh,
so
I agree.
It's truly just a single family household or a single parent.
What about the opportunity for them to learn how to earn money, take it home, get an education, and move forward in life?
That's what we need for kids to be able to move out of doing the other things that they're doing and the gang warfare and the legal activity and everything else that's going on. Tim, I very much appreciate the call. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're going to have some more fun tonight, people, I promise. But as long as we're in the serious situation, Mike Toney is coming up after the 3:30 news. He is he's a military veteran. He's going to talk to us a little bit about what happened in Orlando, his thoughts on the gun situation and protecting yourselves in these situations and what the police did down there. That'll come up after the 3:30 news. Matt Bubala with you here on Radio 720 WGN.
Time to celebrate Father's Day. But are there any adults in the room? I'm Rick Pearson. On the Sunday Spin, we'll talk about what the Springfield impasse may mean to Illinois' road repair season, and we'll talk about what's in store for homeowners on their property tax bills.
The Sunday Spin, Sunday morning, 7 to 9.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Lab.
Did you get the results yet? Do I have mold in my house?
Well, let me check. I don't know yet. Call me back in a couple weeks.
It shouldn't take weeks to find out if your house has mold. It shouldn't take days. It shouldn't even take hours. Introducing the 5-Minute Mold Test from Healthful Home. Without a doubt, the best value in do-it-yourself mold testing. Why pay extra fees and wait weeks for a lab result when you can have results in minutes? The 5-Minute Mold Test detects the most worrisome molds as determined by the EPA, the types of molds associated with illness and water damage in your home. The Healthful Home 5-Minute Mold Test is available at select local Ace Hardware stores or visit homemoldtest.com. Are you going to rely on the mail to find out if your home has mold? Find out right now. The 5-Minute Mold Test from Healthful Home. Results in minutes, not weeks. Available at your local Ace Hardware or visit homemoldtest.com.
De-stress in paradise for less with Apple Vacations. Have it all. Non-stop flights, magnificent beaches, unlimited drinks, and gourmet dining. Whether you're looking for a weekend family getaway or a full week of adults-only luxury, the vacation choices are endless with Apple Vacations. Four nights in Jamaica at Malia Bracco Village Runaway Bay start from only $7.99. Or make it seven nights in Puerto Vallarta at Sunscape Puerto Vallarta Resort and Spa starting from just $9.49. Both trips include round-trip non-stop air, resort transfers, all meals, drinks, and taxes. Call your favorite travel professional or visit applevacations.com to book your trip today. Prices per person based on double occupancy for select departures starting June 12th, including charter air on Alaska or extra airways from O'Hare, and taxes and fees including September 11th security fee. See applevacations.com for baggage charges. Prices subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. PC 15094-15088.
This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot are on the hunt for the best baseball bites. Tune in to Chicago's Best Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Are you hot? It was a little cooler today, but I'll tell you what, every other day it's getting about 95 degrees and sticky.
It's going to be a little sticky.
It's going to get back
Father's
up to maybe
Day.
90 today, yeah.
Not that high. No, yeah. It's in the, let's see here, mid-70s.
Oh, today's going to stay cool.
But Monday, 90 degrees, humid, rain. Yeah, it's going to be a warm summer.
The full forecast coming up in just 4 minutes in Rogers News. But for right now, back to this commercial. Are you hot? This could be your lucky day. Air Water Energy is giving you an opportunity to win a free air conditioner tune-up and inspection. And the cool part is that it's only being offered to you night owls in DuPage County. Enter to win a free air conditioner tune-up. If you're a homeowner living in DuPage County, visit theawefactor.com. That's theawefactor, A-W-E, theawefactor.com. Click the red radio promotion bar and enter special code AWESOME. Every day some lucky DuPage County homeowner wins. It's a $129 value. Air Water Energy, the most trusted name in DuPage County for air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and energy. Visit theawefactor.com. Click the red radio promo bar and enter special code AWESOME for your chance to win. That's theawefactor.com, theawefactor.com. Really, with the bumps and the crackling, it really is. It's like we're playing 45s here tonight. We're spinning 45s.
Stacks of wax, baby.
As I used to say, with the little bump we used to play at KSMR, 95.5, or were we 92.5 in Winona, Minnesota, pumping more wattage to your cottage.
Jeez.
Bob's on 720 WGN. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
We're good. How are you, sir?
Good. So I'm listening to the program, and I just listened the last couple of minutes about wages.
Mm-hmm.
So I work at a company that's fortunate to retire after 31 years. I retired at the age of 52.
Nice.
Now I work a part-time job for something to do that pays $13.50 an hour. But when I was a teenager, the first job I ever had, I had for 4 years. By the time I left that job, I was making $15 an hour. Working for a township. So wages, if I'm making $15 an hour in the 70s, and you're looking to make $15 an hour in 2016,
yeah,
this doesn't make any sense. I mean, you can't do it. And I worked this job for basically extra pin money and something to do for 4 hours out of the day. But, I mean, there's no way you can raise a family, and everybody I work with at this job, you're right. They're working two or three other part-time jobs for the full-time job. And now, you know, case in point, you have Nabisco leaving the neighborhood in Chicago for Mexico, where the top wage is $4 a day.
Yeah. Well, that's the tough thing is, you know, when we say, oh, we got to raise the wage to $15 an hour, so we're pushing for that. Meanwhile, McDonald's and Wendy's are both working on kiosks. So if we get it to $15 an hour, they're going to just get rid of a lot of those jobs because they have shareholders to answer to, and they want to make the most profit possible. And the question becomes, and I agree, listen, there should be a living wage, but are there not certain jobs that aren't meant to be a full-time living wage job, that some jobs are meant to be, you know, is it okay for a company like McDonald's to say, listen, this isn't a job we expect you to live on. This is, I want to earn some extra money job, or I'm a second person in a household working some hours job. I guess the question becomes, you know, should every job be a job that somebody could live off of, or some jobs it's okay to say, yeah, come work here if you want to make some extra bucks, but we don't pay that high of a wage. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well, I agree with you. Okay, and I grew up in Chicago, and then out in Libertyville. And so, you know, the International Harvester plant closed and moved. And it was the kind of job where you could sort of not have an education, but get a good job with benefits, and then you get a patient, and you get a pension. And you, well, you had the stockyards, you had meat packing, you had all this other stuff where the McDonald's job wasn't meant to be a full-time job.
Right.
That's what it morphed into with everything else leaving and moving out and about. There was that job, and you had to transition to something of a more livable job.
Yeah. You're breaking up, Bob. I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it. And when we were kids, Raj, I remember my girlfriend in high school, Julie, worked at McDonald's.
Yeah,
and I think she worked with all high school kids in McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some adult managers.
Right.
And I think it was mostly high school kids. And now any McDonald's I go to, it's Hispanic people working at it. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what it is. But they're adults. And that's helping really support their family. It's a shift in how those jobs are consumed. And I don't know if that happened because kids weren't taking the jobs anymore or people were here that just needed the jobs or why it is, but the jobs are being used in a way that I don't think they were necessarily intended for. And McDonald's or any other fast food company, I don't think has exactly changed with the times, but I never go and I spend way too much time at a drive-thru. Let me tell you, I'm ashamed about
it. You have kids,
but I do.
So,
Look, I do it myself, Roger. It's terrible.
Oh,
but I never have a kid serve me anything, it seems, anymore. It's not 17, 18-year-old kids. It's young adults, sometimes middle-aged adults who are working these extra jobs for whatever reason, and they're not making much money doing it. Okay, it's 3:31 in the morning. Mike Tony will be with us. He's got a book coming out called Liberty of Nations. He's a military expert type guy. He will chat with us a little bit about what happened in Orlando after we check the news right now with Mr. Roger Badish. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. I'm speaking with Mike Tony. He's a national security and international relations expert, author of the forthcoming book, Liberty of Nations. Mike has served in the United States Army. He has been over in Iraq. He's been in Afghanistan. He knows something or two about the weapons that are being used and things like that when it comes to, let's say, what just happened in Orlando. Mike, thanks for jumping on the phone with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Matt.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Orlando for a minute or two. There's so many different aspects we could talk about with it. There's questions about gun control now. There's questions about Islam. There's questions about a gay nightclub. So there's all sorts of different things in the air here. Let's go for a minute to the weapon that was used and how it was used. There's a lot of chatter on the internet about reloading and what can be done, what can't be done, if everybody had been armed in there. There's all these conversations that arise whenever something like this happens. So what's your general take on the weapon that was used and how this was carried out and what maybe could have been done to stop it?
Yeah, so the weapon that was used, I'm not sure about the pistol, but the rifle would be a Sig Sauer MCX. It was designed for the special operations community to fire a .300 blackout round. It's a relatively new caliber. And it's as quiet as a pistol cartridge, but packs an AK-47's punch when fired.
So what is the, what does that mean? Because those of us that don't know, it's quiet, but it packs this punch. And what does that do? What does that mean?
Well, where an AR-15 round is designed when it impacts someone to tumble. And, in fact, that's where most of the damage comes from a .223 caliber round. The .300 is designed to go in and out, much like an AK-47 on. So it might help in explaining the number of injuries that were sustained in the nightclub. Why were there 50? Well, it's because, you know, the round can go in, penetrate, and then come out and strike another person. It carries that much grain or powder behind the round itself.
And when people are questioning how this guy could have actually reloaded and shot this much, if it's only, say, a 30 bullet magazine that he's putting in, you think that this can be switched out very quickly and somebody could keep shooting very quickly?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm very familiar with the M4 or AR-15 platform, having used it in my 4 tours back in Afghanistan, and I can tell you that a private fresh out of basic training is able to perform a magazine change in 5 seconds, less than, probably. So with a 30-round capacity, and the round that he was using being able to travel through, I don't think that the numbers that we're seeing are all that surprising.
Off air, you were mentioning that I believe you said that there was one. Was there an off-duty security guard or officer there? Somebody was able to exchange some fire with them before police arrived?
Yeah. Right. So when the shooter entered, when Mateen entered, he encountered an off-duty. It's my understanding it was an off-duty Orlando police officer, exchanged gunfire with the police officer, and several other officers arrived on scene to provide backup to that initial officer. So at that point in time, we had an active shooter scenario. Put as many officers in there as we can, preserve the life, and hopefully, take the gunman down. That would be standard procedure.
Okay. So that does not happen here, though, right? You mentioned there were some other police officers there, but we all read about the three-hour kind of standoff until they broke in with a vehicle to come after him. What exactly do you think went on there?
Right. So when we went from the officers initially on scene, we had an active shooter scenario at that point. When Omar Mateen barricaded himself in the bathroom, it became a hostage scenario. And the hostage scenario begins to play itself out. So what does that look like? The hostage negotiation typically follows three basic steps. We isolate, contain, and then negotiate with the hostage taker. Negotiations, and here's why. Negotiations typically have a 95% success rate.
Mm-hmm. So there's hesitancy to go in right away because that's more likely going to be a bad outcome if he starts shooting hostages, right?
Right, yeah. So negotiations are based on three basic assumptions. The first is that the hostage taker values his own life. The second, that the hostage taker needs something. Political change, jihad, what have you. And the third is that the hostages are bargaining chips. Where we run into problems here is that Omar Mateen violated point three. The hostages weren't bargaining chips. The hostages became objects, collateral. So based on that and the statement that he had explosives, the Orlando police decided to breach the wall of the structure.
And then what exactly happened then? Was there a shootout? Were they able to just shoot him? Did more people die when they broke in?
Yeah, so we're going to figure out how much of it was police involved because we're talking about, crossfire at that point in time,
right?
That's something that I'm sure will come out later in the medical examiner's report. But the decision to breach was ultimately the correct one. When the hostages are starting to seem as objects rather than bargaining chips, it's time for the tactical commander to make the decision to enter in a dynamic fashion.
Because that is thought to be the best way to save the most lives possible at that point?
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. So what they would have done is placed some sort of breaching charge on the outside wall. They failed to use the correct amount of explosive. I'm guessing, and this is only conjecture, that they didn't want to use the maximum amount of explosive necessary to breach that wall because you had casualties right behind there, right? You had the hostages right behind that wall.
Right.
So what they ended up using was a Lenco Bearcat. You'll recognize that from the Boston shooters, the Boston Marathon bombing. So that was the device that ultimately destroyed the boat that the bomber was laying in. It's a 15-foot extendable hydraulic battering ram and thermal imaging capabilities. So they would breach that wall. As soon as they breached the wall, the hostages came out, and then Omar Mateen decided on what's known as suicide by cop, came out with his rifle and pistol in hand, and police did the absolutely correct thing in taking him down.
Yeah. Did he come out shooting or just pointing? Do we know?
Having been in situations like that, I can tell you that there's such a fog surrounding that moment that he could have been shooting. He could have just been seen as with hostile intent,
yeah.
And that's having
I'm saying that I understand they're shooting no matter what, and they should be, absolutely, in that situation. But
sure.
I'm just wondering if he came out guns blazing, going down, trying to get as many as he could, or how exactly he did. And I guess we'll learn.
You know, and I think that's, Matt, that's probably, if he had any rounds left in him, this gentleman was obviously suffering in some psychological manner. And I don't see any reason why he wouldn't have, right?
But yeah. Yeah, it'd be
surprising. I don't think that's clear in the reports or anything that we're hearing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the gun for a minute or two. You mentioned it was a Sig Sauer MCX, which is very Greek
right.
to me. But there's a lot been going around this week about the creator of this gun said this was what it was invented for the Army. It shouldn't be used for this or that. What is, you know, as somebody who's used these types of weapons in military, military level situations,
sure.
What do you think about a civilian being able to get their hands on this? Now, I'll give you my background. I've never touched a gun. I believe in our Second Amendment right to defend ourselves. It drives me insane that somebody can get a hold of something that can do this type of damage.
Right, but, you know, how do you put the genie back in the lamp at this point, right? And it's become a question of escalation, right? As the criminals get better guns, the police have to militarize with things like this Lenko Bearcat that we saw,
mm-hmm.
which give law enforcement officers this pseudo military image when we see them on television. So I don't know if it's possible to put the genie back in the bottle with assault rifles.
Well, I want our military officers to have them. I want our police
sure.
to have them.
Sure.
I don't want somebody to be able to go to a gun show or into a gun shop or somewhere and legally purchase this. And my guess is this could have been legally purchased. Is that possible?
Oh, I'm sure that it could be legally purchased. Here in Colorado, you know, you can purchase an assault rifle at the local shooting center that I go to. Yes, Matt, I agree with you in principle that if these guns shouldn't outright be banned, we should have some sort of training program in place for somebody that's going to buy one of these weapons.
Should be a ridiculously high level of hoops you're jumping through to get your hands on that thing, right? I mean,
right.
we should all feel you're well-trained, psychologically stable, and all of those things before that you're walking out the door with one of these, I would think.
Sure, sure. If we have to get a special license to drive a semi-truck,
yeah.
And most of us could figure that out, shouldn't we have to get some sort of special license to have an assault rifle?
Yeah.
And there's a difference between, you know, what's reasonable in hunting. I'm not looking to take any guns from hunters. I hunt myself. In fact,
yeah.
I own an AR-15. But I was in the military for 9 years.
Right.
I know what the weapon does, and I respect it. And I think that's we need to have some level of training in place.
And if you had to go through a serious amount of training and get a special license and things like that to have your AR-15, you're okay with that?
Yes. I'm in favor of background checks, and I'm in favor of some sort of training taught by the NRA, right? That somebody has to go through before purchasing an assault rifle.
Yeah.
And I think that's a compromise that we could really make right here in the United States. How do we preserve the Second Amendment? Let everybody buy whatever they want, but let's make some training. Let's put in some safeguards, some background checks, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's going to have to be some compromises made by some people to make some change. I mean, and that's, you know, and I understand the NRA's position, because there's always a concern that if we cave on one thing, then it's a slippery slope. But, you know, when people are getting a hold of these things that are, you know, or people on no-fly list that can still buy guns, that concerns you. And I think that concerns everybody. So hopefully some good will come out of this, that some people will come together and the politicians and the NRA and people will come together and do some stuff here. What is your concern level, as somebody who's been in Iraq and Afghanistan, about, and we don't know exactly, I don't think, what's going on here with Mateen. And I imagine we'll get more knowledge down the road here. But what is your concern level
right.
with an Islamic radicalist here in the United States? You know, we know the concerns overseas. What's your concern level with people here in the United States if it turns out that this was purely religion based on his part?
Sure.
And so then we have a terrorist attack right here in the country. Somebody who was born here in the country. What's your concern level with that?
Well, and this is the third that I can think of. Right, we have. the San Bernardino shooters, and Nidal Hassan. And I think that we can tie radical Islamism to all three of those incidents. So my concern isn't that an attack will happen again. It's when and how can we prepare America for it. What's the compromise between safeguarding our individual liberties and telling the truth about the risk that we really pose, or the risk that radical Islam poses to us? I do have a level of concern. My level of concern, though, is that we're going to move too far. So as a society, we have these certain basic liberties and principles that we're founded on. I'm worried that those will get lost as we get more and more terrified of these lone wolf attacks.
Yeah. But how, you know, we gave up some personal liberties after 9/11. We've all survived with them on some
sure.
levels. I mean, as far as going to the airport, as far as the NSA and everything else, you know, there's a lot of questions about how much personal liberty we've been given up and how far the government's willing to go. So,
and how much they're going to tell you that they're taking from.
Exactly, until we sue to find out, right? So
sure.
What is that? What is that happy medium? Where can we find that where we can feel safe but not feel like we gave up what makes us Americans?
And that, I think that's going to be a sliding scale, right? My daughter will never know what it was like to get on an airplane without having to, you know, take your shoes off and be patted down four times.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as we evolve as a society, we're going to put safeguards in place to protect what remains of our freedoms. And I think it's going to be up to the voter, or it should be up to the voter, to decide what normal or you know, reasonable protections for our freedoms look like.
As we move forward.
And do we listen to the voice of fear? Do we listen to the, you know, the alarm bells ringing? Or do we take the more level-headed approach and say, you know, we'll deal with these incidents day by day, and each time they occur, we get better and better. And listen, it's the ones that we don't hear about, right? The Joint Terrorism Task Force out of Washington, D.C., some of the smartest, most dedicated people you ever meet, and they have to be good every single time. And like President Obama said, these guys just have to be good once.
That's
so
true.
It's that balance, right?
And it's got to be, you know, and I don't know if Mateen was a lone wolf in the general term, but if somebody acts complete, I know there was some questioning of him previously and it didn't, you know, it didn't stop him. But, you know, if somebody acts completely on their own without a lot of web searches or things like that or knows what they're doing, then that's going to be really tough to stop.
Well, and it's going to be up to the communities. Because when these people self-radicalize, there's some sort of propaganda that's getting to them, right? Some, you know, it's social media primarily is what ISIS uses. So how do we combat these slick propaganda pieces from ISIS, who is an Islamic authority, or who certainly considers themselves to be an Islamic authority?
Right.
And it's going to be in getting the local imams and clerics on board and saying to them, listen, your young guys are going out and waging jihad. What can we do at our level to stop it? And it will be engaging the Muslim community to proactively find these gentlemen and steer them away from the propaganda. We know who's at risk, right? We know the age bracket. We even know the types of mosques that they're coming from. They're typically Salafist, Wahhabi mosques of the Sunni sect. So if we know these things, we can put together a profile. If we can put together a profile, we can get out in front of them. And I think that's what we need to do.
The book Liberty of Nations comes out when, Mike?
Comes out in 90 days. It comes out in 90 days.
And what will you tell us about in that book?
I'm going to go through 10 simple steps that I think we could take as Americans, as a country, to tie us a little bit together and make us a heck of a lot safer.
We'll look for that in bookstores and online, I imagine, in 90 days. You can find out more through Mike. We'll give out a website here in a little bit where you can find out more about Mike. But I really appreciate you jumping on the phone tonight.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you having me.
So that's Mike Toney, the book Liberty of Nations. LibertyofNations.com is his website that is still under construction. Texter 847 says, Matt, seriously, why don't you address the real issue, please? Radical Islam is the problem. This is just stupid to turn this nonsense into a gun control issue. Well, that's a take on it that some people have that I don't completely agree with. I think radical Islam, yes, is an issue. I'm not afraid to use the term radical Islam. I understand why the president is hesitant to. He addressed that this week and saying one thing or another doesn't stop it, and he feels it's a red herring, and so he tried to address that this week. But I do believe gun control is an issue. That this man was able to go get that gun to do that is a problem. Him becoming radicalized and the radical issue or things like that, yes, that is certainly a problem. But the fact that he could go get a gun to do that type of damage, I think, is another problem. We have a lot of mass shootings here in the U.S., and that somebody who we can put on a no-fly list can still go get a gun like that and just walk into a place and start shooting is an issue. News is next on 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. The big story today, well, yesterday now, the IAAF upheld its ban on Russia's track and field team for the Rio de Janeiro Olympics, which are coming up just a couple of months away, not even a couple of months away, a month and a half now. What will happen next? Joining us on the phone, you remember him, longtime reporter at the Chicago Tribune on the Olympics and all sorts of sports, now reporting on his own and for the United States Olympic Committee, Philip Hirsch joins us on the phone. Hey, Philip, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I've been just finished watching the press conference from Vienna, which the International Track Federation announced its decision in the case of whether Russian athletes would be able to compete or not in at the Rio Olympic Games in track and field.
Now, let's backtrack a little bit and understand this. The announcement I read said upheld its ban. So we already knew that there was a possibility that they would be banned, and then they just had more meetings to decide whether to uphold that or what happened here. What happened today exactly?
They appointed an independent investigator to look into this further, and what happened today was they decided that they came to a sort of Solomonic decision in which they said that no athlete will compete in track and field at the Rio Olympics under the Russian flag. They left an opening for athletes, quote, outside the system, end quote, who can, quote, demonstrably able to convince people they were, quote, demonstrably, end quote, clean, to have a chance to compete as neutrals. So that's and what this is going to lead to is perhaps a massive bureaucratic backup of athletes applying and trying to have their cases considered one by one.
So is there precedence for that? Have athletes competed in the Olympics before sort of under no flag?
They've competed under the Olympic flag, but as far as I can recall, it's always been for a geopolitical reason, not right. A doping reason. For instance, the former Yugoslavia was banned at Barcelona in 1992, and its athletes, some athletes from some of the former Yugoslav republics, competed under the Olympic flag. Athletes from East Timor did that at the Sydney Games. There is going to be a refugee a team of 10 athletes at the Rio Games competing under the Olympic flag. But this is the first time, so far as anybody knows, that such a solution has been adopted in a doping or other related case.
Now, they're hoping, Russia is hoping at least, that they will look at those individuals and possibly allow them to still compete under the Russian banner, correct?
Russia right now is reacting with dismay, as was to be expected, and they're probably going to challenge, at least the pole vault champion, Yelena Isinbayeva, has already said she's going to take this to the European Court on Human Rights grounds. The Russians will undoubtedly challenge this to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So, yes, they are going to challenge it, the ruling that only athletes are able to compete under this limited possibility of being neutrals.
And what do you think of that? Because it's very interesting when they're saying demonstrably show that they're clean. I mean, they take the test. How else can they demonstrably show that they're not associated? You know, is this a way for them to punish Russia because they believe systematically they keep pushing these athletes into doping?
Well, they made it very clear that systematically they are pushing athletes into doping. And more than that, systematically they are tolerating it. Mm-hmm. Whether they are advocating it, in all cases, they are clearly tolerating it. So they basically said the whole Russian doping control system is corrupt and tolerant of doping, but they wanted to leave open the possibility, and the Rune Anderson, the independent investigator, said it was done for legal reasons. They wanted to leave open the possibility not to condemn every athlete, to leave open the possibility to have some athletes compete, other, because they expected legal challenges, and they will get them. And as long as they've created some sort of out, it might give them a chance against these legal challenges.
Russia seems to be trying to spin it as, well, there's some bad apples here, but you can't punish all these good athletes that have spent their whole lives working hard, seemingly ignoring the part where the entities are saying, no, it's Russia that's causing the problem, not these individual athletes.
To that, I would say, let's go back and look at the case of Enron, where the upper management of the country was doing things that were not legal, and the company went under, and a lot of innocent people suffered. That's what happens. If you know, it's too bad, but if you're part of a thoroughly corrupt system, sometimes just being affiliated with a thoroughly corrupt system is enough to wind up having a serious effect on you.
Now, Philip, if we could go back for a minute and explain how they're finding out that these athletes in this system is so corrupt. Aren't they reanalyzing tests from, like, the 2012 games and earlier right
well,
now?
Well, they've got an 8-year statute of limitations, so they've reanalyzed. They have no statute of limitations for doing retesting. They have a statute of limitations 8 years of applying penalties. So they did do 2008. They did do 2012. The Russians have promised that they will not send to the Olympics any athlete who has been previously positive for doping. That was one of the concessions they tried to make, that they were making in an attempt to have the ruling against them be less stentorian.
Yeah, and so that seems like fair. It's like, hey, these athletes aren't even around. There's a whole new set of athletes that have spent their whole lives working to get here, so we won't send anybody that's tested positive before. But that was not enough to appease the powers.
This now goes to the International Olympic Committee, which is apparently having an executive board conference call tomorrow and a meeting on Tuesday, in which it has already been laid out that they're going to discuss, quote, individual responsibility versus collective guilt. Mm-hmm. So I think that even though the International Track Federation already offered up a compromise today, I think the International Olympic Committee will push for an even wider-reaching compromise. It's a very interesting thing. If you read the Olympic Charter, the section on eligibility for the Olympics has been changed. The language that gave the International Olympic Committee ultimate say over who is eligible, I can't find anymore. It now is clear that they are leaving that up to the individual international federations, which is what they try to do. They try to let the international federations set their own standards. So, I mean, what you're going to have here is a lot of lawyers are going to make a lot of money between now and the Rio Olympic Games.
Was any of this based on the testimony from the athletes who they're retesting? Have the athletes said, well, yes, but here's how that happened, here's why that happened? Has there been a lot of evidence pointing to it wasn't just me individually trying to get better, it was the culture and the system that I was under?
So far, I have not, in the reaction from those athletes who have been identified as having test positive in retesting, I have not seen that sort of reaction.
And with this whole retesting, so it's all these years later that I know they have 8 years to apply punishment. Is this happening now because the technology's gotten better and they can go back to these samples and find things that they couldn't find previously?
Well, the technology has clearly gotten better. The question of how well the samples are stored always will be a question. I mean, these samples do deteriorate over time, and if they're not stored properly, they'll deteriorate faster. So they are doing it with better technology than they had before. But there clearly could be legal challenges mounted to what the accuracy of some of that testing.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. And is Russia the only country that's really embroiled in this? I mean, if they're going back and doing all this extra testing, I imagine a lot of countries are being retested, but Russia's the only one so far?
No, there have been a number of countries. I don't have the exact list. I saw that the other day that some Kazakh athletes were caught up in this. Apparently, there are athletes from a number of countries, and it's not all track and field athletes. Athletes from a number of countries have been caught up in I'm trying to remember the exact number of positives. I think it was 23 from 2012 and a certain number more from 2008.
With this retesting and the what's being said now, are there medals that are being taken away as well, or were none of these athletes caught in, you know?
No, medals will be stripped. That's where your 8-year statute of limitations comes in. I mean, for years there have been discussions. When the Berlin Wall fell and the records kept by the Stasi, the East German secret police, became available to the public in the late 80s and early 90s, there has been a lot of very, very direct evidence of the amounts of doping and the whole doping system that existed in the former East Germany. And yet, because that happened so long ago, once it was discovered, and at that point the International Olympic Committee didn't even have an 8-year rule in place. I mean, there's always the talk, of course, was always about the 1976 Olympics, and there's a very, very good documentary that USA Swimming has just done, which is about to come out about that, where the East Germans won 12 of the 13 gold medals in swimming, and there's been a lot of pressure applied over the years to either strip the medals and give them to the next person or do something, but they did not have the legal means to do that over the years. Now they have a legal means established to change results going back as far as 8 years based on retesting.
And even if they can't take away a medal because they can't legally do it, say, for whatever, they could award another medal to somebody, couldn't they?
Well, they're not. That's one of my problems with even with the East German clear evidence that a lot of those East German swimmers doped. One of my problems with reassigning medals or moving people up is that the testing of the other athletes may not have been any better. Mm. So, I mean, you're basing a reassignment on the fact that you think that the other people weren't doping. I mean, many, many years ago, swimming, and not even so many years ago, swimming didn't even test the top three finishers at the Olympic Games. So, you know, it's a very, very slippery slope.
Yeah, interesting. We're speaking with Philip Hirsch. You can find him on his website, globetrottingbyphiliphirsch.com. He's writing for the United States Olympic Committee website, teamusa.org. When we come back, a little bit more about the upcoming Olympics, which he'll be at. I also have some questions outside of the Olympics for Philip. That's next. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Philip Hirsch. He wrote forever for the Chicago Tribune for the Olympics. Now he's out on his own. Globetrottingbyphiliphirsch.com is his website. And, Philip, are you already writing for TeamUSA.org?
I have done four feature stories on athletes for them. One on a Chicago native, Becca Mann, a swimmer hoping to make the Olympic team in the 800 meters, who has also written a fantasy book and that's been published, and then is going to University of Southern California to their film school to study screenwriting, which is a remarkable achievement. I also wrote another one on Ibtihaj Muhammad, who will become the first person to wear hijab while competing for the United States in the Olympics. She's a Muslim fencer. Written one about Allyson Felix and why it is that the country has not given enough credit to one of its greatest athletes ever. And the fourth one was about African-American gymnasts, given the history of African-American gymnasts in the United States, given that our two top female gymnasts, reigning Olympic champion Gabrielle Douglas and three-time reigning world champion Simone Biles, are both African-American young women.
Well, excellent. Sounds good. So you can find all that at TeamUSA.org and Philip's website, globetrottingbyphiliphirsch.com. So the Olympics are coming up August 5th as opening ceremonies. How early do you get there, Philip? A week ahead of time or just a day? Or what do you
do? It used to be a lot earlier. Now that I'm more on my own, I'll be there. I think I get there the Tuesday before the games begin.
Okay. And everything pretty much outside of this stuff that's going on now so far has been about either the poor quality of the conditions at the Olympic sites or the Zika virus. So going into this, how much concern do you have about any of that, and how much do you think it will affect the games?
Well, Rio has this is the latest, obviously, a problematic area for Rio, which has been inundated with them since 2009 when they won the vote. At a time when their economy was booming, it was one of the developing economies, Russia, India, China, Brazil, and there's a fifth one which is escaping me. The economy has since then done a 180, which has caused incredible financial pressure on putting on the games. There have been problems with getting the facilities built. There were promises made about cleaning up the water in some areas where athletes are going to compete that have not been kept. There is, of course, now the Brazilian government, the president has been impeached, and there's an interim person running the country. And then, on top of that, you've got the buzzing in your ear from the Zika virus, which, and the effect of that is yet to, is yet to be determined. And there are a number of athletes and others, including Savannah Guthrie of NBC, who is pregnant with her second child, who have decided that they don't want to run the risk of going to Rio and the possibility that being bitten by one of these mosquitoes could lead to birth defects in their child. So, I mean, so far the World Health Organization has said that has advised pregnant women or women who intend to get pregnant to probably avoid travel to Rio. That is not going to stop a lot of athletes, for whom, particularly athletes in the non professional sports, even though there are professional swimmers and professional track athletes, but other than sports like basketball, those athletes who can only have a chance once every 4 years to do that, most of them are going
to
go.
Yeah, it'd be tough to say no to that. Well, and so they're only advising the women, but what about the men? Because the Zika virus gets stored in semen. If there's a young male there who's planning on possibly getting his wife or partner pregnant, that can be an issue too, right?
Yeah, they're actually the problem. One of the big problems with the Zika virus right now is that the amount of research on it has not been that great so far, and so there's a lot of guessing going on. The definitive answers are not easy to come by. I mean, men have been advised. Men returning to the United States have been, even if they have not contracted the virus, which mostly in young healthy males would lead to sort of mild flu-like symptoms, they've been advised to practice safe sex for a period of 8 weeks. And if you're intending to get your partner pregnant for a period of maybe 3 months, to practice safe sex, which obviously involves use of condoms. It's not what Rio signed up for when it became Olympic host in 2009.
Yeah, absolutely not. Now, thinking back on that time, and I don't remember what you wrote about it at the time because it's a long time ago now, but Chicago was in the mix. Chicago fell out very quickly once they started voting. But looking back now, if we would have gotten those Olympics, what do you think the headlines would be in Chicago right now?
The headlines worldwide would be mostly about the gun violence in the city, without question. And the headlines in Chicago over the previous 3 to 4 years, given the budget deficit that Mayor Daley informed us existed when he was leaving office, the headlines would be all about money, clearly about money. There'd be some stuff about inconvenience. But there would be virtually all of it would be about how are we going to afford this, why are we doing this, et cetera.
So do you think in the end it's better, but we're better off not getting them?
Given the financial problems that Chicago has experienced in the now 7 years since that vote, it's better for the city that they don't have to try to justify putting on a bread and circuses event, even though I'm absolutely sure it would have been a great success, and I think it would have enhanced the image of Chicago. But the International Olympic Committee could have made a much safer choice had they chosen Madrid, which even 7 years ago was probably within 2 or 3 years of being ready to have the Olympics then. So, that's 2020 hindsight. I think that, I wouldn't be going to my 18th Olympics if I didn't think there were positive things about the Olympics, and I do think there are positive things about the Olympics. You know, in a world full of conflict, even in 17 days of relative peace among people from 200 and something nations is not a bad thing. In one place, in a competitive environment, which creates friction of its own. But clearly, given what has happened to Chicago financially since 2009. Trying to justify spending all that money on Olympics, whether or not it made a profit, and whether or not, I mean, where it might have helped Chicago in the long term is I think that some federal money could have been freed to help our transport system, which is critical to this city remaining competitive in the 21st century. So there would have been some tremendous advantages for having the Olympics out beyond having a Olympics and Paralympics, essentially a one-month party. I think there could have been some long-term advantages, but clearly the short-term problems that Chicago, and which may be long-term problems that Chicago and the state of Illinois are facing, are so gigantic that it may be the best that the city is not the host.
You mentioned relative peace at the Olympics, and that has not been talked about very much because of Zika and because of the waterways and everything else going on in Rio. So how well are they prepared for the possibility of terrorists or things like that?
Well,
I'm sure that's on
really
their
minds. An interesting point you make, Pat. I mean, normally, given the world situation at the moment and given what has just happened in Orlando, given what's happened in France, given what goes on in Iraq far too often and other places in the world, normally the highest discussed issue at this point would be security, and there is virtually no discussion of that at all. One has to presume that that is the number one priority still for the Brazilian Olympic organizers and for the Brazilian government.
Well, I guess you'll tell us more about that when you get there. We've got to go, but real quick, you're still a member of the Baseball Writers Association, correct?
No, I'm not, because I've been away from the game for 10 years.
Okay.
I could have appealed. There was no reason to appeal. I like the reasons the reasoning that they had about keeping Hall of Fame votes. So mm-hmm. I simply said, I'm fine with this. I'll no longer have a Hall of Fame vote.
Okay. Well, just
I'm still a member of the honorary member of the Baseball Writers, but I am not
a voting member for the Hall of Fame anymore. Well, tell me, there was a big kerfluffle this week about Ichiro getting more hits all time now than Pete Rose. How do you think that should be remembered in the grand scheme?
You know, Pete, you know, so you put an asterisk on it and you say Ichiro has more hits in two countries than Pete Rose had at Major League Baseball. I mean, Pete Rose is the Major League Baseball hit leader. There's
right.
no question about that, and there shouldn't be any question about that. And if you want to note someplace that Ichiro had more hits in Japan than plus Major League Baseball than Pete Rose had in Major League Baseball, then that's fine. But maybe you should add Pete Rose's, I don't know how many hits he had in the minor leagues, maybe you should add some of those. I mean, as long as it's, you know, as long as the Major League Baseball list says that Pete Rose is the all-time leader, then nobody should mind if somebody indicates with some sort of asterisk that Ichiro had more total hits.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. And Pete Rose, I feel like he has made sure that he is never getting into the Hall of Fame. Do you see that ever changing?
Well, he certainly has not increased his chances dramatically. I mean, what will be interesting to see is that over the next couple of years with this smaller electorate, and probably a younger electorate for the Hall of Fame, because a number of older baseball writers, who, such as myself, who weren't involved daily, are no longer voting for the Hall of Fame. Be interesting to see if there's more tolerance for people like Bonds and Sosa and whatever.
Yeah, we'll see. Philip Hirsch, you can find him at globetrottingbyphiliphirsch.com and follow his stories at teamusa.org. Philip, I hope we get to talk to you again when you get down to Rio.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's my pleasure.
The great Phil Hirsch. Matt Bubala with you here, Radio 720 WGN. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here on the Magnificent Mile, Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN for about another 20 minutes, and we'll have Orion with the morning show. Celebrity travel host Ian Wright is hosting something called the Lick Hiker's Guide to Inner Strength. It's about bacterial and gut health and all the things you should be doing. And, you know, they say, you know, kids eating a little bit of dirt, that's good for you. Get a little bacteria in there. Get stuff going. Helps you out. Makes things better. We're efforting Ian right now. So he's licked bathroom floors and doors and handles. Disgusting things like that. Roger, when I go to a public washroom,
yeah,
I almost never touch a handle.
Use the paper towels?
No.
How do you, with your elbows?
Use my foot.
What?
To flush?
Oh, that. I take a paper towel.
There's not always a paper towel in the stall.
Then you use toilet paper.
Yeah, I don't do that. I can just put the foot up there if it's reachable.
No, that's...
Now, if I have to, I'll touch it with my hand.
You stand a chance of slipping, and that's just not good for anybody.
Well. Haven't thought of that.
Yep.
I haven't slipped yet when I've done that. But,
yeah.
I do not like touching things in bathrooms and public spaces and airplanes and everything else. I'm not super freaked out by it, but I don't love it.
You're overly cautious. Not overly.
Not overly,
cautious.
But I do think about it, and I think about not so much the bacteria, but just a lot of, you know, people don't wash their hands and do things, and it grosses
you know
me
what?
Out.
Ever since my cancer and surgery,
mm-hmm.
I have become way more conscious of that.
Keeping clean.
Just watching out for what you might get that others have left.
Have left behind. Well, let's talk a little bit about that with a gentleman named Ian Wright, who joins us from overseas right now. Hey, Ian, good morning.
Good morning there.
Thank you for jumping on the phone with us. I'm reading a piece of paper here. I don't know if it's true or if this is just some false media information I'm getting here, Ian. But it says you're hosting something called the Lick Hiker's Guide to Inner Strength, and that you're actually licking things that normal people would say, of course, I would never lick that.
I think that's ugly rumors. I don't know where you got that from.
Yeah,
what human being would do that? But I'm afraid to say, completely true.
A one who's getting a paycheck for it. That's who, Ian. That's who would do that.
That's what I like to hear, yes. I'll do anything. I've got no shame.
Is this a documentary movie? Is this a series? What is Lick Hiker's Guide?
It was a challenge from Valio, who are like some yogurt company in Finland.
Okay.
They've got this new thing called Gefilus, which has got bacteria attacking little bits in it. So because they know I'm all go around the world and eat any old rubbish like cockroach or, you know, rancid shark and stuff like that. So they're like, right, let's get him to lick the dirtiest places in Europe, test him at the beginning, and then give him our product and then see if he's still alive at the end of it. And strangely, when they approached me with that idea, I leapt at it like a gazelle. Like, I'm straight, feet in, I couldn't help it. I was like, oh, that sounds great. So maybe that says something about me.
So now, have you already done all the licking necessary for this project, or is this still ongoing?
I think I've done enough licking for a lifetime, to be honest. And it's been filthy and horrible. And when I saw the result, I was like, oh, dear, I'm not going to come across too well in that, am I? But, you know, it is done.
Well, all right, tell me, Ian, what is the, in your mind, before you knew the testing of bacteria and everything afterwards, when they said, okay, Ian, we found this area, you're going to go lick that. What was the worst thing that you had to endure?
Well, the good thing is even I found my limit. So that was a nice thing.
Did you say no to something?
I did. I know, shocking and a little bit disappointing as well. But there was a Russian toilet that nobody should go in just to do normal stuff in, let alone lick anything ever in the world. And it was just like, no, and we had a little Barney with it. I was like, no. And there was another shot where the cameraman had set this. It was a dustbin, you know, just a bin where people put all their rubbish in, had a hole in it, and then it had all where everyone had put out all their cigarettes on the side, so there was all ash. And it was a nice shot because it was set up with the Frankfurt station in the background in Germany, and he was like, Ian, lick that bit there. And I was like, oh, I was like, you've gone too far now. The problem was I set myself up for a fall because they're like, oh, he's obviously mad, so he'll lick anything. And it's like, we want 15 licks out of you every day. Now, go, go, go. And then I had to go, no, you're going to get 4 because you've gone so far that they thought, oh, he'll just do anything. So there were the two things that I had to say no to.
Okay, what is the worst thing that you did lick?
Well, I think that there was a handle that in the Frankfurt station that it was, there were like 250,000 people go past it every day and use it. So we flew to Frankfurt just for that handle. Nothing more, nothing less, just for that handle. And I was there, and I had to give it a go about 3 times. There was also a shower in a radio station in Finland, but best we not go into that. Let's not go.
Okay, all right. Well,
it's too early for anybody.
Let's go back to the train. So it's a train station. There's a handle that a million people walk by. Blah, blah, blah. They all touch it. You licked it.
Yes.
And then did they test
it? Say that. They touched it, you licked it.
Did they test it then for bacteria to see what you just put on your tongue? Did you know beforehand? Did you not ever find out? And did you get shots or anything to, like, what if you licked Ebola or something crazy?
Well, there's always that little risk, I suppose. And, you know, I had to suffer for me after the authenticity of it. But, no, I didn't. To be honest, I tell a lie, that wasn't too bad. That was in the normal readings are about 300. If you're around about 300, 200 and below, you're all right. anything above and you're in a whole heap of pain. That one was about 2,000, wasn't too bad. I tell you, the worst thing is there was a phone box, there was a phone receiver in Russia, which I licked, and that was probably the worst, and that went up to 5,000. My own tongue, towards the end of it, was 6,000, and then in my own, after going all around the world, all here, there, everywhere, I had wiped my own sink in my bar, in my kitchen, and the scrubber thing that you clean all the plates with, and that went up to 8,000. That was the worst.
So you had more bacteria in your kitchen than anything you had to lick as part of this project?
Yes, yes. And only about 3 points off my own tongue. So that's even worse.
So wait, when they tested your tongue, you had about as much bacteria on your tongue as most places you had to lick?
Yes, by thousands.
Is that standard for all of us, Ian? I'm sure you know this by now. If I tested my tongue, would I find that it generally has more bacteria on it than most bathroom door handles?
Well, I don't know you. I don't want to judge you. Inside, I am, but
that.
Yes, I think it's pretty standard. But obviously, there's a sliding scale, and mine slid a little bit after what I had done. But yeah, I think generally, bacteria in your mouth and stuff like that is, you know, where all the horrible bits go.
Sure. Aren't there differences in the type of bacteria? Imagine bacteria that's in our tongue all the time is bacteria we can live with versus bacteria that's spread by germs and whatever on door handles. Are there, I imagine, different types of bacteria and some good, some bad?
Well, that's the thing. It's like just because it's a huge number on the thing, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily bad. Doesn't mean that it's sort of bad germs. And me, I'm from the philosophy, like if you're so low, then actually that's a bit dodgy, because then you're not having these bacteria fight inside your body. You know, when I was young, you know, I'd be eating bits of dirt from the ground. If there was a sweet down there and no wrapper, you know, cool, that was a result. You know, that was the 70s. That's what we did, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where your fight, you start the fight in your body, as far as I'm concerned, about, you know, bacterial. If you're so, the problem is these days, everything's so clinical and everything's so thing that we're actually losing our body fighting those bacteria from a young age, you know. If we're wrapped in cotton wool, then that's just as dangerous is the other side, you know, so it's the balance in between, really.
So when you're not feeling well now, maybe you have a day you just feel off, stomach doesn't feel good, got a fever, whatever, do you feel like, maybe my bacteria levels are off, I'll go lick a door handle and try to even those out, or?
Yeah, I just get in the garden and sit, or I'll go next door, because their toilet's a little bit filthy, but don't tell them that, they
neighbors
won't be listening,
yeah.
So I'm not worried. But no, that's why I've been drinking this little, odds and sods anyway, because it's Gefler switches this yogurt drink. They've got a bacteria in there that is a hairy one that hangs to the inside of your stomach and really gives you a little boost.
Is that how they want you to sell it? There's a hairy one that hangs to your stomach?
Yeah, that's my own take on it. They're not happy about it, but that approach myself.
But that didn't go through the PR team. Have them talk about hairy one that hangs from your stomach. Yeah. Everybody will slug that right down.
I tell you what, someone's on the other phone already. It's not looking good. My house. Oh, no. Why did we ever get him to do anything for us? That's the last time. the good thing about it is like, this documentary was, I didn't have a criteria of, you know, for or against. It was just I had to see. So when we interviewed scientists, they said, well, Valeo is the company that comes to us. When we get the results, even though they're paying us to look at the results, we put them online straight away before we give them to the company, because we're working independently and whatever we find in our researchers goes out to the general public first. I mean, that's fantastic. So they haven't got an alliance. They've just got, this is the results, everyone can see them, you know.
Yeah.
And the old pharmaceuticals don't do that, but let's not go down that path.
Now, Ian, when you would lick something that was really disgusting, I imagine some things, you know, you knew how much bacteria there was or wasn't, didn't care, but the taste would have to be different, I imagine, on various things. Would you, so you lick it, they shoot it on camera, say, okay, cut, and then immediately, like, you drink a gallon of Purell or some sort of sanitizing thing, or do you just go, well, that's okay, and move on with your day? How do you move past what you have just done?
Well, see, I haven't had that question, and I was hoping it would never come up, but I'm like a dog. I'm like a feral dog. Like, oh, you know, it doesn't faze me. It should do, but I, you know, I don't know.
Seriously, you'd go lick a door handle and then say, okay, that's good. Let's go on to the next scene. And somebody'd go, do you want a mint or something? No, I'm fine. It's all good. I'm good.
Like I said, I hope no one would ask me that question. Maybe, I tell you what, maybe a drop of water.
Just a drop.
Pops or a little drink, just a little sweet. Yeah, just
little
mouthful,
a little swig.
But not a, not really a, a big overhaul of the tongue.
No, okay. Ian, yeah. I'm going to take a wild stab and say that you are not married or otherwise encoupled.
Strangely, I was 4 days ago.
And not anymore. Came out. Yeah, because I can't imagine somebody willing to kiss you knowing what you're doing for your job during the day.
I know, but it takes a special woman to do that. Do you know what I mean? Lucky I'm there, eh?
Whew. I guess.
Smell myself from here.
But let me ask you, seriously, so you're married. What did the missus say when she knew, well, I got to go look a couple door handles today, honey. When you came home at night, I'm guessing that night was just a kiss on the cheek and nothing more.
Strangely, no surprise there. She wasn't fazed by it at all. It was like, it seems to be part of the parcel. There he goes, off licking things again.
She knew what she was getting into when she hooked up with you, huh?
Yes, I think we both knew what was going on there. So, but don't worry, before I got, because I was abroad, so before I got back, there was a lot of toothpaste involved.
Good, good, excellent. You finally did. Finally did clean up. Well, Ian, I appreciate you jumping on the phone with us. I know people can follow you on Twitter at Ian Wright E, at an E-Y-T, Ian Wright's name, I-A-N Wright E-Y, at Ian Wright E on Twitter, and follow his adventures. What's your next adventure? Now that this part is over, what's your next I know you're one of these travel writers and food guys who does crazy things all around. Is there something very special we can look forward to you doing next?
I tell you what I'm doing for Discovery Asia. I'm in Hong Kong eating as much food as I can. Anything in Southeast Asia, the food out there is absolute heaven. So and it's someone from Hong Kong showing me around this time, so I'm just going to go wild with it. Oh, I'm so fat now. It's beautiful. I'm rubbing my stomach now. Oh.
Excellent. Ian Wright, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. Have a great day.
No problem. Enjoyed it.
Excellent. Ian Wright, the Lick Hiker's Guide to inner strength.
I'm so glad you did that by
yourself. Aren't you, though?
Yes,
aren't you, though, Roger?
Yeah.
All right.